inform you that the law...
You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the February 9, 2022 reading of the Environment Program. This is Karen Wheeler, and today we will be reading the following main stories. From the February-March 2022 issue of the National Wildlife Federation magazine, What's Wrong with This Picture? Written by Melissa Grew. Suited for survival. With changeable coats and courageous tactics, weasels are miniature masters of the carnivore game. Written by Lynn Warren. And following up with miscellaneous articles from other sections of this issue of the magazine. First up, What's Wrong with This Picture? Photography game farms offer visitors the chance to pay for a quick, easy shot of captive animals that are brought out for photo shoots, but often kept in poor conditions. Written by Melissa Grew. You've seen them and heard about them. Those impossibly stunning images of elusive wild animals on magazine covers, in calendars, and all over social media. Perhaps it was a heart-stopping photo of a mountain lion jumping between rocks, a tiger surging through snow straight toward the camera, or adorable bobcat kittens peeking over a log. You marveled at the photographer's courage, timing, and luck. And as a fan of photography, you wanted to know how you could make photos like that, too. But what if you found out that some of those images hid tales of neglect, that the elusive predators that seemed so wild and free were actually spending much of their lives in small cages with concrete floors and only enough space in which to turn around, occasionally let out of their cages to serve as subjects for photographers? That is precisely the nature of some facilities that participate in the little-known industry of photography game farms in the United States. Through extensive examination of multi-year federal and state records obtained through Freedom of Information Act requests, I learned that a few photo game farms in Montana and Minnesota are the exotic parallel to domestic puppy mills, breeding and selling wild animals such as wolves, foxes, and lynxes. Some of the babies are separated from their mothers at early ages and sold to buyers such as dealers or roadside zoos. Others are kept to feature in baby animal photography workshops, but when the animals reach adolescence, they may be viewed as surplus and sold off via the exotic pet market. For decades, photo game farms have drawn amateur and even professional photographers who come for staged photo shoots, paying as much as $500 for a single session with large species such as a tiger or a bear. Many photographers then return home, upload their photos to websites, license them to stock agencies, and share them on social media, often not disclosing that their subjects are captive. The result? The wildlife photography market is flooded with thousands of what many professional wildlife photographers consider to be deceptive images, and many admirers of such photos, from purchasers to friends and followers, assume they're seeing amazing shots of elusive predators taken in the wild. This may give the public the impression that these animals, even some who are endangered, such as snow leopards, are thriving in the wild. From a natural history standpoint, this could be a misleading message that hurts conservation efforts. I've spent my career as a conservation photographer, so the issue is deeply important to me and to colleagues who share my passion for ethical wildlife photography. We've seen firsthand how photo game farm images have had a significant impact on authentic wildlife photography. Photos that pour out of game farms flood the photo market and devalue the work and commitment of photographers who spend tremendous time, effort, and resources trying to bring us rare glimpses of remarkable animals in their native homes, says conservation photographer Michael Forsberg. Some of these images made in nature, quote, may not be catalog perfect, he adds, but what truth would you rather see? And what story would you rather hear? That a photographer paid money to have someone take a wolverine out of its cage for an hour? Or that after half a lifetime logging miles in the backcountry, the photographer finally saw a wolverine appear for a brief moment crossing a high alpine snowfield? For photographers like Forsberg and many of our colleagues, it is possible to make even, quote, catalog perfect images ethically in the wild. But those who do often spend months, even years, learning about an animal's behavior and habitat and observing from a distance so they'll know how to avoid stressing an animal or altering its natural behavior. Continual advances in camera technology are also enabling wildlife photographers to capture images of elusive predators like never before. Remote camera trapping, in particular, is a powerful tool for obtaining such photos. Capturing images of mountain lions in the wild is so hard because they're often incredibly secretive, says Charlie Hamilton James. Camera traps allow me to get images of them up close and at a wide angle. This not only helps me to capture a secret moment, but it reveals the landscape that the cat lives in, so it tells a story. As more nature photo consumers, along with state and federal regulators, have learned about the often low standards of care for captive animals at some photo game farms, these facilities are less numerous than they once were, with only a handful still operating in the United States. Yet the few that remain continue to take a toll on these animals that inhabit them. It's relatively easy to purchase and exhibit exotic animals in the United States. An exhibitor's license from the U.S. Department of Agriculture costs from $40 to $310 a year, depending on the number of animals held. Basic standards of captive animal care must be met, such as shelter from weather extremes and adequate veterinary care. But some photo game farms have been found to fall short. During an inspection in 2021, for example, the Triple D Game Farm in Kalispell, Montana, was cited by USDA for alleged animal welfare violations, such as keeping animals in dirty enclosures tainted with feces, flies, and filthy water. Such inspections are required once a year, but even if violations are found, enforcement may be lax. In 2015, for example, USDA revoked the license of Minnesota Wildlife Connection, Inc. in Sandstone after it was cited for several alleged animal welfare violations, including failing to ensure uncontaminated food and failure to handle animals, quote, so there is minimal risk of harm to the animals and to the public. During a public photo shoot, one of the facility's wolves reportedly attacked a child and was consequently euthanized. Yet the facility still operates as a photo game farm. When I contacted the USDA asking about this, an administrator replied, quote, the investigation is still open. Despite the greater availability of quality remote camera traps, photo blinds, and other advances that help wildlife photographers capture stunning images of elusive animals in the wild, it's costly and time-consuming to go into the field, So there is no question that captive wildlife can hold great appeal for many people who can point their lenses at species from faraway places they may never be able to visit. And because they may be somewhat acclimated to people, these animals often display natural behaviors such as preening or playing, seemingly oblivious to onlookers. Fortunately, there are many zoos and aquariums that offer opportunities for wildlife photography while remaining committed to high standards of public education, conservation, and care. And there are true sanctuaries, which rescue abused, impounded, abandoned, or injured wildlife. As photographers, it's up to each of us to do some research before visiting any captive facility to determine whether it's a place that exists to exploit animals or to care for and conserve them. Here are a few tips on how to select an ethical facility for captive wildlife. First, if you want to photograph animals at a zoo or aquarium, look for accreditation by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, or AZA, which ensures rigorously high standards of animal welfare and veterinary care, as well as robust conservation and public education efforts. The Zoological Association of America has somewhat less stringent requirements. If visiting a wildlife sanctuary, check for accreditation by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries or the American Sanctuary Association, both with very high standards for all facets of captivity, including living quarters, enrichment activities, veterinary care, and conservation education. Even if a facility, such as a small rehab or rescue center, doesn't yet have formal accreditation, it may still provide excellent care. One thing to ask is if the facility buys, sells, or breeds animals. When animals are treated as commodities, profit often trumps animal welfare, and such commercial trade can fuel illegal wildlife trafficking. Also, watch out for claims of breeding for conservation. Unless a facility is part of AZA's species survival plan, such claims are likely untrue. And ask if a facility offers pay-to-play hands-on experiences with predators such as big cats. Such practices put both the public and animals at risk. Zoos, aquariums, and sanctuaries that care for captive animals play an important role in inspiring people to connect with nature and support conservation. Nature needs an engaged, inspired public now more than ever, says Joel Sartori, founder of the National Geographic Photo Ark. Attempting to document the world's species before they disappear, Sartori does most of his animal portraits in zoos. Most people cannot travel far and wide to view wildlife, he says. So I believe deeply that good zoos, ones where there is abundant attention and care, keep people engaged and informed. People won't save it if they don't love it. To help you learn more, the online version of this article includes a sampling of facilities across the United States that I feel offer great opportunities for captive wildlife photography in relatively natural settings. But from my experience, there is no substitute for spending time observing wildlife roaming free in the wild. You may not get that perfect picture, but you'll get memories that will last a lifetime. Suited for survival. With changeable coats and courageous tactics, weasels are miniature masters of the carnivore game, but humans may be stacking the deck against them. Written by Lynn Warren. Weasels take on winter without a flinch. While many other creatures bulk up with insulating fat layers and denser fur, hunkering down in cozy dens to wait out the worst of the cold, weasels stay sleek and on the move. When days grow short in fall, these tiny hunters molt, most trading summer's brown markings for a pure white coat, historically treasured in the fur trade as ermine. That silky white fur, barely thicker than their warm weather pelts, makes them hard for predators to see against snow. Long-tailed and short-tailed weasels, the two larger of the three Western Hemisphere species, retain highly visible black tips on their tails, which scientists speculate serve to attract the attention of owls, hawks, martens, fishers, foxes, badgers, cats, and other hungry predators, leading them to lunge at the fluffy tail tip and miss the larger ermine-wrapped snack. Least weasels, the smallest of the trio, lack the black tail tip, but their tails are likely too short to serve as effective distractions anyway. The weasel's winter white camouflage may also backfire as the climate continues to shift. When snow cover arrives late, or not at all, those white coats become bright beacons against dark tree trunks and the drab remnants of summer growth, increasing the wearer's peril rather than reducing it. Though males grow larger than females, and there's tremendous individual variation within the 16 species worldwide, weasels are among the world's smallest carnivores. In studying the three weasel species that occur in the state, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks found that long-tailed weasels weighed from 3 to 12 ounces. Short-tailed weasels, also known as stoats, topped out at 6 ounces, and least weasels weighed no more than 3. All share slender, nearly tubular bodies ranging from less than 10 inches long, including tails for least weasels, up to around 16 inches long for long tails, although a third to half that length can be those tails. Oregon-based U.S. Forest Service biologist Mark Linnell recalls holding a female short-tailed weasel in the palm of his hand. She was 35 grams. That's about the weight of 7 nickels. You really notice their vulnerability. Tiny doesn't equal timid, and hunger is a powerful motivator. Most of the weasel's preferred prey, including voles, mice, shrews, lemmings, moles, and chipmunks, pass the winter eating and sleeping beneath the snow. A thick covering of snow protects these small rodents from most predators, but not from weasels, says veteran carnivore researcher Roger Powell, professor emeritus at North Carolina State University. All three weasel species are at home in the dim world under the snowpack, using keen senses of smell and hearing to follow the trails of prospective meals. And with their lithe build, they can easily slip into burrows and dens where they grab their quarry and deliver a killing bite to the spine or the base of the skull. They are supreme experts at tunnel hunting, Powell says. Many of the rodents that Powell calls weasels, quote, bread and butter, are subject to boom and bust population fluctuations, so these stealthy hunters have evolved to exploit all available food-gathering tactics. They've been observed crossing fast-moving streams and even swimming nearly a mile to reach small islands adjacent to their mainland territories. In the Pacific Northwest, Linnell and his colleagues have found weasel scat 115 feet up in Douglas firs, where red tree voles build their nests. Such high-rise expeditions can yield rich rewards. Once a weasel gets to a tree vole nest, it's very much like the burrows they hunt in on the ground, he says. They can often score an adult as well as juveniles and carry extra prey back to the forest floor. With no room in their confined space hunting zones for bulging bellies, weasels maintain their lean physiques by consuming only small meals at any one time. But their high-speed metabolisms require them to eat often, up to 10 times a day. Having extra carcasses stashed under rocks, among stumps and fallen branches, means they can still grab a crucial mouthful, even if a hunt proves disappointing. When small prey are scarce, the constant need to feed leads weasels to take extraordinary risks, stalking and attacking rabbits, hares, rats, even birds that are many times their size. One kick from a 3-pound cottontail can easily kill a 3-ounce weasel. Animals that take prey larger than themselves, wolves for instance, commonly boost their odds of success by hunting in groups. But solitary weasels are bold and confident out of proportion to their size, according to Powell, and they seem to play by a different set of rules. For all their toughness, weasels have many scientists worried. Powell says he's been wondering for the past 2 decades why he's been seeing fewer and fewer of the animals, or even traces of their presence. Longtime small mammalian carnivore researcher David Jackowski of Clemson University found himself asking that same question in conversations with other wildlife specialists. So the biologists put together a team to examine 4 sources that promised insight into weasel population trends and the animal's current ranges: historic fur trapping records, museum collections, independently verified community science observations reported on the iNaturalist platform, and the results of a 2019 wildlife trail camera survey conducted at 1,509 sites across the United States. Their analysis, published in PLOS One last summer, paints a chilling picture. Least weasel populations appear to be increasingly fragmented, and long tails show, quote, a dramatic drop-off in numbers detected since 2000, especially around the Great Lakes and in the central and southern parts of their range, which once covered most of the United States. The International Union for Conservation of Nature, quote, still classifies weasels globally as a species of least concern, Jackowski says. But the population status of small carnivores is reviewed much less often than that of their larger kin, even though they face many of the same threats. Those include habitat loss, disruptions to snowfall patterns driven by climate change, and the legal and illegal use of rodenticides, which increase weasels' risk of starvation by decimating their main food source, or kill them outright when they ingest poisoned prey. Many U.S. wildlife managers recognize the risk. More than 20 states have already identified one or more of their native weasel species as needing conservation action now. Jackowski especially hopes this new perspective will inspire more people to be aware of weasels in their midst and report sightings when they happen. There's a growing consensus that, quote, we really need to know more about what's happening with weasels, and that's a conversation we weren't having before. Thank you for joining us for the Environment Program. This is Karen Wheeler.